bringing a Rooney in to help me? It changes nothing.
I'd be surprised if it did.
He pushes off the wall, moving toward me.
But for now, spend this time sharpening your blades. At least until Bea has completed her task.
That's a big ask. He reaches me, warm, calloused fingertips skimming across my knuckles, his gaze a quiet request. Sighing, I loosen my grip, allowing that white flag to rise between us. A fragile, fluttering thing I intend to shred the moment I leave this room.
Would you like me to cover you with a cloth before I take this off?
My breath hitches. All three Vagor brothers originated from the Burn, where nudity is considered a comfort, for some, far less sexualized than it is this far south, so I'm not too proud to appreciate his consideration of my culture. For asking. I open my mouth, close it. Finally, I shake my head.
Tell me if you change your mind.
With my nod, and not once breaking eye contact, he eases my tunic down my shoulders until it's bunched around my wrists, the chill air nipping at my bareness while I study his lashes, so long and thick. A pretty distraction. He reaches around to gently tuck the drape of material around my hips so it's not agitating my ragged flesh. You know this is pointless, right?
Not to me.
He rumbles, then takes my hands in his big, sturdy ones. His a tan complexion like the stone walls, mine the color of snow. He leads me toward the chair, steadying me so I can lift my leg over it and settle on it backward before he lowers with me, giving me the dignity of not looking upon my damage. A mercy I appreciate in this small window of ceasefire. I rest my chest against the heavily cushioned backrest, hands in my lap as he folds into a kneel. A soft knock sounds on the door.
Enter,
he murmurs while I hold his severe stare, like looking into the crumbled remnants of a fire that's lost its flame. The door swings open, closes. I hear Bea's soft, shuffling steps, then sounds of her readying for the procedure. The king barely blinks as she cleans some of the blood from my back with damp sweeps of a cloth, squeezing the ruddy excess into a bucket on the ground. He barely blinks as she paints my back in a bonding agent, the familiar sting sinking through layers of filleted flesh before she sketches out her paths with the flick of a delicate paintbrush. I'm still intent on killing you, if given the chance, I warn past clenched teeth.
Don't forget to cut off my head,
he murmurs,
or I'll haunt you for eternity.
I don't believe in that. Not one bit. I've cut off very few heads in comparison to my rather large body count, and I'm yet to see a single spirit claw at me from the shadows. He lifts a brow.
Then what do you believe in?
He asks, his voice guttural. Revenge. All the warmth sputters from his eyes, like part of him just slipped away.
Revenge is the loneliest deity of them all. Moonbeam. Take it from someone who knows.
I open my mouth to speak again, but Bea cuts in. If I'm to do this properly, it will take a while. And it will hurt. The cuts are deep. She will have to relive the pain while I mend the damage. I realize she's not warning me, her eyes able to see what most others cannot. She's warning him.
She can do it.
He rumbles, gaze challenging me to do just that. With my nod, Bea begins etching her runes, reversing the lifespan of my wounds one vile slash at a time. The king holds my stare as I'm stitched shut in over 100 ways, though it doesn't feel like that. It feels like I'm being ripped wider, my insides bared, examined. Perhaps because I'm used to doing this without an audience besides the Rooney fixing me new. without somebody else timing their breaths to my own, as though reminding me to breathe. Without somebody else tightening their grip on my hands every time I flinch, wiping the sweat from my brow, rubbing tracks across my blanched knuckles as if to calm my rioting heart. It's a humble moment of peace, despite the pain lancing through me. A quiet moment destined to scream. It doesn't matter how much of my skin is smoothed or how deep he kneels at my feet. I'm still an assassin marked for execution come Aurora Rise, and he's still a tyrant king. Diary entry. Eloen Nevan. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. I was working on Alum's wing stretches this day, singing her a soft, calming song while extending the fine bones as far as they could go, which is now almost a full extension. She was getting restless, swinging her head around and nudging my side, looking at me with those massive, glittery eyes, like she was trying to say something. She even threw a little flame toward the entrance, which is very unlike her. I now realize she was challenging it. Suddenly, she began tilling her wings so fast her gammy one clipped me in the head and threw me back toward Hadion's chair. I skidded across the ground and landed amongst a pile of ice boulders Ma's moonplume Nathay had recently brought in because we think she might be broody. I hit my head. Hard. When I opened my eyes again, Alum was gone, but I could see her through the entrance, fluttering across the sky, light shafting off her brilliant silver hide. Could see her long, silken tail dusting the dim with each wonky waggle of her wings. Could see the plumes of aqua flames she kept throwing skyward, accompanied by squealing shrieks, like a victory cry to the moons, to her ancestors. I scrambled up to check on Hadion. He was smiling. He looked me right in the eye and said, "Thank you," in a voice so rough I think the words might have hurt coming out, and I've never felt happiness so fierce. For the first time since I climbed in Hadion's sleigh all those phases ago, I felt remarkable. Rave. Chapter 27. "Okay, that's the last," Bia says, smoothing an oil over my back, her hands soft and tender, rubbing all the tension from my now-healed flesh. Battling the urge to groan with relief, I open my eyes, looking straight into a pair of intense cinder orbs, a line dug between the king's thick brows.
"You okay?"
he asks, tightening his hold on my clammy hands.
"I'm great," I slur, tugging them from his grip. "Never better. So glad he tortured me back to health during my last living moments. What a way to go out. Fitting, but a bit shit."
I lean back so I can lift my hands up over the chair's headrest without snagging my chain and take the towel slung over his shoulder, the one he's been using to dab at my forehead whenever sweat beaded down into my lashes.
"I'll get my fine-tipped prongs for the pin," Bia says while I stuff my face in the towel, scrubbing the tension from around my eyes, hearing the sound of her footsteps before she begins rummaging through something. Her words finally sink past the fog currently clouding my head.
"Prongs? What do they need fine-tipped prongs for?" "Oh." I pull the towel from my face, catching the king's stare again. "You're removing the pin?" "Makes sense. Wouldn't want any hatchlings choking to death on it if I'm carted west and spat out in a molten maw's tinder nest."
"You wear iron cuffs,"
he murmurs, his gaze dragging over every angle of my face, like he's mapping out the shape of it, landing on my eyes again.
"The pin is unnecessary."
"Well, yeah, but I'm unnecessary, remember? Skin slabs, wreck Zaros's finger, I don't think you appreciate quite how close you came to being hacked into bits, then tossed off the wall. But hey, thanks for mending me before I die, even though it makes no sense. The corner of his mouth kicks up.
Hacked into bits, you say?
Obviously. You're the biggest male I've ever seen. I shrug, biting down on a wince because that pin absolutely hurts. It's blatant now that my skin's no longer slashed to ribbons. There's no way I could have dragged you to the edge after I slit your throat.
But you didn't.
I frown, wishing he wouldn't stuff my indiscretions in my face like that. He smelled good. I fucked up. Let's not dwell on it. The prongs aren't here, Bia says, and that small smile instantly falls off the king's face as he pushes to a stand.
I have some in my saddlepack, but it'll take me a while to get there and back,
he announces, striding toward the window covered by a round of aged, half-rotten wood.
How are we on time?
Give me a blade. I wave my hand in the air, jingling my chains. I'll cut it out. The king abruptly stops, and both he and Bia glare at me like I just asked them to pretty please bare their throats so I can slice them open. I roll my eyes. I won't stab you. White flag, remember? I won't give it back, either, so don't give me one you're particularly attached to. The only thing worse than losing a good blade is losing all your good blades. Damn it. The tips of my fingers tingle with the urge to gouge them through Rex Zoros's throat and rip out his trachea with my bare hands. Now that I'm mended, the injustice is extra crippling. I'm more than well enough to hunt him if it weren't for these fucking chains. I can put a salve on it, Bia suggests, turning her attention to the king, like I'm not even here. That's a terrible idea, I gripe, reinserting myself back into the conversation. I have a pin in my shoulder. Now that we're all talking about it, I'm growing more and more pissed that I'm going to die with this thing in me, and I think it's only fair that I snatch my comforts wherever I can find them, thank you very much. I lean back from the chair, spinning so I can see the king properly. You have a blade, no doubt. Hand it to me, I say, flopping my hand out for him to fill. Any blade, I'm not picky. Let me root around for a bit. You can close your eyes if you're squeamish. He clears his throat, not for one moment dropping his gaze to my naked breasts now on full display while he turns and grabs the wooden window covering. Sliding it sideways, he peers out, muttering a curse beneath his breath.
Does the salve have rindle root in it?
To numb pain? Interesting. He wants to ease my suffering as I'm haled into death. And there I was ordering a handsaw to make disassembling him easier. It does, Bia responds, digging her hand into a large leather bag she has stretched open on the work table. She pulls a jar free like it's some sort of trophy, and I frown at the lumpy green paste inside. And fermented eel eggs. To disinfect. But most importantly, to make you smell like you've been shat on. No thank you. You know what? I say, trying to wrangle my shirt back on. Fuck it. I'm good. Doesn't even hurt. Let the hatchlings choke.
Do it.
The king slides the window cover back into place, snipping off the extra spill of light.
We don't have time to cut out the pin,
he says, nailing me with a stare that shoots straight through me and out the other side.
The aurora's about to rise.
My heart plummets so fast I almost vomit. Damn. Guess it's almost time to die. I side-eye Rook's empty cell as I rock from side to side, dragging my itchy back against the stone, an itch that threads bone deep in places, making me want to rip apart all Bia's hard work just to satiate the uncomfortable sensation. Guess the incognito king made good on his promise while I was away. I hope Rook's satisfied with his saber-scythe tusk and that he wasn't instead fed to whatever beast it previously belonged to. I'm not stupid enough to believe this scratchy gift I've been given comes without caveats, too. Few folk help others in this world without expecting something in return. There's a reason I was coaxed to that room. I'm just yet to work out what it is. Easing my tunic down, I reach back to finger the goo Bia stuffed in the hole punched through my shoulder blade, frowning at the acrid stench. Now I get to die smelling like fermented eel eggs, barely softened by a herbal twang. Lovely. At least it seemed to finally quench the king's strange, almost compulsive desire to take my pain away. I frown. Perhaps it has to do with the one I remind him of? Perhaps healing me assuaged him somehow? Made him feel better about himself? That must be it. I breathe a sigh of relief, thankful I worked out the riddle. I did not want to take that question to my gnawing end. A drop of mildew lands on my nose, dashing my relief. A splatting reminder that I'm in a cell, waiting for death. That these are my final moments. Fuck. Scanning my surroundings, I take in the resting forms of my cellmates, envying their deep, languid breaths. Sleep would be nice right now. I could exist elsewhere for a little bit. Anywhere but here. But I can't summon the urge to snuff myself into oblivion. I'm too wound up inside, like there's a lightning storm caught in my chest, zapping me every time I even think about closing my eyes. For all I know, the guards might be charging down this very moment, ready to drag me to my fiery doom. My insides knot. I bat the thoughts away, but just like Nee used to, they keep bumping against me, nuzzling me. Loved that. Hate this. I pull my chest full of air and slowly blow it out, picking at the skin down the side of my nail. Don't think. Don't think. Don't think. I close my eyes, tapping my foot to the quiet, calming tune lilting in the back of my mind, timing the beat to the splats of moisture falling from the ceiling. Splat, 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 splat. The hairs on my arms lift. My eyes pop open. Through the bars, a waggle of distorted air draws my gaze, no taller than knee height. My eyes narrow as it peels away to reveal a crouching creature with a wild tangle of fur the color of snow, matching her brows and lashes, though contrasting with the smooth, pale pink skin on her face, neck, legs, and arms. Uno lets her cloak fall to the ground in a rumple of inky fabric sketched with luminous runes, flashing me a mischievous smile that's all sharp teeth. The organ in my chest squeezes so hard, I fear it might crack down the middle. "What are you doing here?" I whisper hiss through clenched teeth, leaning forward, nipping a glance down the tunnel, my pulse powering so fast my head feels light and airy. Her large, fluffy ears twitch as they strain for sound.
"Serim spoke to Master, commanded I get you out."
Icy rage rumbles in the pit of my belly. Of course Serim ordered this, which means she intends to replace me with another, to feed the crown with another. What's worse, she put Uno in danger to retrieve me. Ruse must be out of her mind with worry. Uno pulls a pick from one of the many colorful patchwork pockets stitched into her woolen garb, stretches her body into a long line, grabs my lock, and slides the thin metal pin into the opening. "Stop." Her delicate hands still, pink eyes flicking to me, slit pupils narrowing. A line forms between her brows, the white, tufted tip of her long tail flitting back and forth.
"Get out of here, Uno. Please, you can't risk being caught."
Her lips peel back from pin-sharp teeth, buttony features contorting into something honed and horrific.
"You are not Master.
The words slit my skin, leaving a stinging trail.
You do not command me.
Stubborn Miss Gunn. I sigh, glancing down the tunnel again, then back into her fierce eyes. They know I'm a threat. If I live, they will double down their hunt. I pause before landing my kidney shot.
They will find ruse.
Uno snaps her teeth together and snarls, lips thinning. Her tail spears forward, brushing against my cheek. Her eyes flash iridescent. She goes statue still, her already pale complexion lightening so much her skin turns translucent in places where it's most thin. Her temples, the insides of her frail wrists, the lanky bend of her knobbly legs. Silence stretches as she languishes in one of her rare foretellings, and I swallow, watching the prismatic flecks in her eyes churn. The pink bits congeal, rising to the surface, glimmering red in the warm light. Her tail whips from my face so fast it's like I'm made of fire, a shuddered breath sucking through her pin-tooth maw. She blinks, pulls her pick from the lock, and folds back down into a crouch. Droplets of hope I didn't even realize I possessed splatting against my ribs. You know I'm right. She tucks the pick into the little pink pocket on her woolen garb.
Master will die if you do not go to that Colosseum. Serene, too. I have seen it now.
My chest deflates, and I nod. That's settled, then. I'm not surprised, I whisper, forcing a smile. I pissed off the Guild of Nobles. Thoroughly. I imagine they'll turn this city upside down to find me if I don't make it to my execution.
They will, she says with stoic certainty. I will relay my seeings to Master. She can pass them to her Master, who can pass them to her Master.
My smile softens. You do that, Uno. She reaches into her orange pocket, revealing a piece of coal.
Come,
she says, raising it for me to see. I frown. With another glance down the tunnel, I lift my metal pole so my chains won't drag along the ground and shuffle forward. Uno gestures for me to rest my head between two bars, the metal brisk upon the sides of my face. Her bottom lip wobbles as she drags the piece of coal across my forehead. I immediately know the shape she's drawing, so thoroughly familiar with the moon I seek out in the sky whenever I'm looking toward the shade.
This is right,
she whispers, and I swallow the odd thickening in my throat.
I know.
She tilts back, knobbled knees up around her cheeks, studying me while I study her. It's on the tip of my tongue to ask whether or not I get munched right from the steak or carted off to Boggeth and fed to a clutch of hatchlings, despite knowing her visions are sporadic, that the outcomes can shift and sway. But I decide it's better to drown myself in ignorance right until the bitter end. I close my eyes, not wanting to say a goodbye that'll taste like ash, hearing the near-silent pad of her scuffled steps fade into oblivion. Only when I'm certain she's gone do I open my eyes again, looking into the empty space before me. I clear my throat, shuffling back to the wall, rubbing my itchy back against the abrasive surface.
Why a ball?
Comes a rasped voice to my left. I look sideways at the male I thought was asleep, bunched beneath his filthy blanket, instead watching me through the bars.
It's a moon.
He frowns.
Then why a moon?
I cast my gaze forward again, tap, tap, tapping my foot to the soothing tune in my head.
Because they fall.
Even when we don't want them to.
Rave. Chapter 28. I'm escorted through the cramped and crowded ditch, flanked by the crown's beaded soldiers,
the sky weeping flakes of snow that dust the ground, an icy cushion for my barefooted shuffle past tight-lipped city folk. It's not normal to be marched to the Colosseum with a parade of guards and rows of silent witnesses, but with an abundance of posters slapped on the walls alerting of my capture and execution time, I understand. They watch me shuffle through the thin cleft in the crowd, both sides lined by more fade soldiers, like fence posts guarding a flock of stock. Swords at their hips, narrowed eyes scanning, perhaps waiting to see if any Fir Du'ath will step forward and show themselves. Try to help me. I'm confident they won't interfere, not after Uno's foretelling. So I keep my chin high as I pass faces I recognize, fey folk and even a few creatures I've come to trust over the phases. Other members of the Ath who played small but poignant roles in my life before I fell upon this sword I've spent my gnome life sharpening. To me, their faces glow like moons. Just like the ones in the sky, I hope they don't fall, sad that I won't be around to see this kingdom restored to its former glory. Serene will do it. I know she will. Eventually. Much as I hate her, the bitch doesn't know how to fail. A seed of hope I'll take to my death. Stony-faced servants of the crown cradle bowls of what I can only imagine is some sort of animal blood, splattering me with throes of it, drenching me in its metallic reek as a thunder of molten maws shadow the sky, the booming beat of their powerful wings thumping, thumping, much like my rallying heart. A speck of snow settles on the tip of my nose, and I look up, smiling. Certain everybody else thinks I'm suffering from the brisk weather. But I wonder if our water goddess knows otherwise. If rain's waving me off with frosty tears that actually bring me a sense of comfort, chilling the fire in my veins and the anger in my heart. There's no point to it anyway. Not anymore. It's over. Done. I'll go to my doom shackled by only two regrets. That I never got to flay Rexaros from cock to throat, and that I failed to experience life in the way Fallon explained it before she passed. This beautiful, bolstering freedom that was always just out of reach. Both regrets feel like splinters in my heart as I'm escorted toward a stairway chipped into the north side of the wall, zigzagging up the levels until I'm almost close enough to the clouds to catch them in my mouth. To taste them. Nearing the top of the wall, I begin rolling onto my tiptoes every few steps, craning my neck, determined to steal a peek of the moon I love so much, one last time. Just a little higher, and I might be able to... I scan the low, snow-spewing clouds that blanket the sky in all directions, obscuring the moons. Every moon. My heart drops, something sharp pricking the backs of my eyes. I'm shoved into a tunnel lined with flaming sconces, and I snarl, the cloudy view blocked by stone and flame. The beat of stomping boots echoes off the walls, and I'm certain those boots are stomping my chest with the weight of my disappointment, fracturing my ribs, crushing my lungs. Brush it off. Stuff it away. I lift my chin as we turn down another tunnel before I'm led up a swirling staircase that spits me out upon the central stage of the Colosseum, so vast it makes me feel like a speck of dirt at the bottom of a basin. Tiny. Insignificant. The thick stone awning shelters a single layer of seating that crowns the building, protecting the vibrant elementals who've come to watch me die. Willing to risk their lives to witness the grisly spectacle. They laugh, gasp, and murmur, pointing in my direction as I'm backed against a wooden stake, my feet lost within crusted layers of snow. I give them a shackled wave, flashing them a smile. "Thanks for coming to send me off," I yell, followed by a murmured, "Assholes." The guards jostle my hands to my sides, binding coils of fibrous rope around me until I'm secured so tight it's hard to pull a full breath. They thread back down the stairs while my lungs wrestle against the constricting bind. A burst of panic explodes behind my ribs. I'm trapped, powerless, so fucking alone. The realization stabs me in the heart, fear seeping through my veins in a rush of boiling blood. My breaths come short, sharp, and fast, that terrible tremble that shook me in the cell resurging with a vengeance. Perhaps noticing my sudden discomfort, some of the elementals laugh, cackles pelting me like thrown rocks. Cheeks blazing, I refuse to look at them again. Instead, I throw my stare skyward, eyes widening on the vibrant beasts circling above, cutting through the clouds, whisking the pretty colors into a churning iris focused on me. Flakes of snow pepper my hair and face as I try to halt my chattering teeth and slow my shallow, frantic breaths. This is a slumber terror I'm going to wake from. As with every slumber terror, you don't wake until it breaks you enough you jolt free. That's it. I just have to break. Then I'll be free. A swirl of action within the Imperial Buck snags my attention, and I see a female move through a crew of parting soldiers, her pale complexion such a stark contrast to the red crown that garnishes a river of ruddy hair. The Queen. I didn't think she attended these. Guess I'm high profile enough to earn the privilege. The feeding bell tolls, and my next breath is a punch to the back of my throat, each gong ratcheting through my bones as Her Imperial Highness reaches the balustrade. Her gaze falls upon me, and she stills, eyes widening with a flash of something. Shock? Disbelief? Recognition? I failed to pin it down. Lacking the heartbeats to care, I let my attention drift to this swarm of beasts flocking the sky. Creators. A massive molten maw lands on the stone awning, yellow and orange plumage making it look like an angry flame come to devour me. I jolt as it tips its long, tapered beak and squalls to the sky, scattering some of the smaller beasts that had begun to descend before weaving its head into the bowl. So close. Its slit pupils expand, and it snaps its solid beak at the air right before my face, like a practice bite. I hold the dragon's scarlet stare. A blow of air gusts against me. The molten maw swings its head to the left, trailing at a second beast almost the same monstrous size now clinging to the awning across the other side of the building. It cranks its beak and releases its own chaotic screech, spraying a haze of spittle and smoke. I turn my head, trying to shield myself from the blast, my stare delving straight into the Imperial box. The Queen is clutching the balustrade with white-knuckled hands, screaming at the soldiers behind her, soldiers that look from her to me, their faces parchment pale. Her wide, manic eyes lock with mine, and there's something in those mossy eyes that disturbs my internal lake. Tears flow down her cheeks, and she begins shaping words I can't hear, though I can see, can recognize. She's singing to Claude, begging her to gust, to spin. The air around me becomes a cyclonic churn of snow and ice almost impossible to glimpse through. The stake I'm tethered to wobbles like it's about to untether from the stage, my hair threatening to pull from its roots, stringy ends reaching for the toiling vortex. The two molten maws screech and shove from the roof, wings beating against the stir of air that rips vibrant feathers from their underbellies, scattering them into the swirl that herds the creatures back toward the clouds. Through the ferocious whisk of snow slicing past my face, I lock eyes with the Queen again, her chest racking with sobs, a warm smile filling her cheeks. Understanding drops into my belly like a heavy meal after a long stint of starvation, and I frown. She's trying to scare the dragons off. She's saving me. A deep, guttural pulse shakes the air, thumping from every angle. The dump, the dump, the dump. All the light leeches from the Colosseum, eclipsed by a terrible darkness that almost swallows me whole. Screams erupt from the crowd, now scrambling from their seats, running for the exits, some tripping over each other in their panicked haste. The queen breaks my stare and looks up past the building's crown, eyes bulging. Confusion punches through me, and I do the same. My heart stops, breath fleeing as the largest saber scythe I've ever seen drops toward the Colosseum with a tail of its billowy wings. It extends its mammoth claws and grips hold of the curved awning, settling its weight on the structure that no longer looks strong and sturdy. Not compared to this beast, the color of an old puddle of blood, appearing black in the places where scraps of filtered light don't touch its plate-sized scales. The entire world seems to tremble, cracks weaving through the stone, bits of it breaking away and plummeting around me, crushing some of the nobles who failed to get away fast enough. Violent howls of panic and pain rattle the atmosphere. The dragon extends its wings to an impossible width, splayed membranes drumming from the force of the queen's cyclonic song, its clawed tips reaching so far I picture them able to bind around the Colosseum more than once. "Shit," I mutter, wondering why a beast so large would bother with such a tiny speck of nourishment. "Unless it wants me for its young." My stomach drops. Not only am I going to die, but I'm going to do it slowly and in the hottest place in the world. Gondor, the Saberscythe spawning grounds. The king was right. I am haunted. All the angry spirits of folk I failed to behead lured this beast to my execution and are now having the final laugh. Good for them. Shit for me. All the breath whooshes from my lungs as the dragon shoves its head down into the bowl with a boisterous swoop, its boxy face barbed in horns and tusks that curl and slash it into something monstrous. It blows a searing breath upon me, peering at me through inky globes crammed within a nest of embers. Something blasts up from the depths of my shattering internal lake like a net that swallows my solid heart. Claws gore into the stony flesh, injecting me with a song that wrestles up my throat and sits on my tongue like a ball of icy flame, prying my jaw wide. It spills in rhythm with my galloping heartbeat, my serrated voice cutting through the din, a language not of the common tongue, but something different. Something I don't understand, and should probably question. The dragon blinks, head tipping to the side while the foreign tune clumps against my teeth like fractals of frost and snow. I frown. Is the beast doing more than just listening to my words? Is it digesting them instead of me? Small drops of hope burgeon in my chest. At least until the Saberscythe cranks its cavernous maw and roars, a billowing blaze spiked with the stench of fried flesh. My heart lurches as I stare at that bulb of ruddy flame welling at the base of its ribbed throat, waiting for that incinerating blast to surge, to burn. The beast strikes. Sharp teeth close around me, casting me in a pitch of darkness that's hot and wet. Splitting, crunching sounds attack me from all around before the stake I'm bound against dislodges from the stage and lurches sideways, taking me with it, leaving my plunging stomach behind. Fear finally masticates me into oblivion.
Diary entry. Elowyn Nevon. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. I slept in the hutch, last slumber, cradled by the silken tuft of Slotra's curled tail, dreaming of happy things. High on the aftermath of seeing Hadion take his first flight upon Olum's back, smile beaming, both of them hollering victory screams to the sky. High on the ride we'd taken together, drenched in moonlight, soaring between jagged mountain peaks, snow gusting in our wake from the giddy swish of our moonplume's silky tails, Hadion more alive than he's ever been. I slept in the hutch, last slumber, dreaming of happy things, while my family slept on pallets they'd never rise from. While some sort of ingested poison threaded through their bodies and strangled them to death. Ma, Pa, Hadion. I know their final moments were painful. I can see it in their bulging eyes, in the unnatural twist of their mouths that won't smile or sing or whisper my name no matter how hard I hug them or scream at them to try. This huge hurt, it fills every bit of my chest and makes it hard to breathe, makes me so heavy I don't think I'll ever be able to move again. Nor do I think I want to. How can someone you love so much be here one moment, gone the next? Just gone. Alum, Nathe, and Akeri keep swooping past the window, screeching, blowing their flames. Every time they cry out, more scores slit across my heart. They must know something's wrong. I don't have it in me to show them what they've lost. Not yet. I'm still hoping I'll open my eyes to find it's all been one big, horrible dream. Ma and Pa's aides say I need to let them go, that we need to commit their bodies back to the elements, to the creators who failed to be there for them when they needed them most. That feels too final. I don't want this to be our final hug, the final time I look into their eyes and tell them I love them. I don't want this part of them to disappear too. They say I need to wear Ma's diadem now that it's finally loosened from her head, but only after it suckled every last drop of life from her body and made her unrecognizable. Now the creators won't stop screaming, spitting hissed words I've never heard before. Words I don't know, nor do I have the desire to learn. Not right now. I think they also want me to don the diadem. Ma once told me she's never felt closer to death than the moment she settled it on her brow. So perhaps I will finally put it on, if only to be exactly that. Closer.
Rave. Chapter 30. My new cage reeks of fiery death and sulfur, a spongy, billowing blackness that rumbles all around me, noises echoing, gurgling, grinding sounds, and the drumming beat of wings. The dump, the dump, the dump. I groan, my face cushioned by a pool of gooey wetness that keeps trying to drown me, slopping over my head and slugging through my hair with every dramatic bank and rise and heart-plunging dip. A serrated blade of fear slices through my chest. The saber scythe hasn't cranked its jaw and nudged me between the wall of sabers my knee is rubbing against, which means I was, unfortunately, correct. There's only one place I'm destined for, if I don't drown to death in its saliva before we make it there. This beast is lugging me all the way to Gondor to feed me to its spawn. Fuck. I have no idea how long we've been airborne. No idea how fast this beast can fly with its mammoth wingspan. For 15 buckets of bloodstone, you can purchase a risky one-way passage to Gondor from Gore's public hutch for those stupid enough to attempt to steal a Saber-Scythe egg, but it's advertised to take 7 Aurora cycles, if you make it there at all. There's no way I have the neck strength to last 7 Aurora cycles. I release a gurgling breath, finding small comfort in the knowledge that I'll probably die before I'm spat out amongst a nest of molten rock beside a clutch of small, hungry versions of this thing. A shiver rakes up my spine as I imagine them scrapping over my remains while they spit primitive flames that lack the punch to end my life cordially. I'm definitely either haunted, cursed, or a bit of both. Suddenly and without warning, the beast plummets. My guts splat against my spine, the force of the fall dislodging the wooden stake from the beast's maw and hurtling me backward. I come to a jolting halt at the back of its throat, eyes bulging as I peer down the ribbed cavern to the swollen pip of flame roiling at its base, painting me in a heat so fierce I'm surprised my flesh isn't melting off my bones. Past and present mince together, mulching my insides. Another tiny jolt backward and that fire will swallow me. It'll finally get me. My heart races hard and fast, and I close my eyes, squeeze them tight, tap my foot against the stake while singing a sprightly song, picturing myself somewhere cold and dark while a patter of snow dusts my upturned face. There once was a jolly wee gypsy who harbored a thieving knack. She gathered her gear upon her back in a pack-bearing dragon tack. She took to the molten bog in search of a fiery egg, it said. She leapt from mound to mound. What could be found? Be found! Into a tinder nest she stole, finding an egg that was whole, we're told. But the egg was already bumping, bumping. Then she heard a thumping, thumping. Flames began dumping, dumping. Our jolly wee gypsy now jumping, jumping. There once was a jolly wee gypsy who dove into the molten bog to escape the fiery logs of a hatching molten smog, then emerged as a velvet trog. I'm suddenly ripped from the back of the beast's gaping throat and flung forward, the log relodging itself against the curving wall of incisors with such force I feel my brain bounce against the inside of my skull. There's no more rhythmic thudump of beating wings. Did we land? Gut-clenching anticipation makes the underside of my tongue tingle. Creators, this is it. I'm about to be spat out in a nest and eaten. I don't want to be eaten. A rumbling sound boils all around me, and the dragon loosens its maw, strings of saliva stretching between the piercing peaks of its catastrophic teeth, each far bigger than me. Brightness shafts between the widening gap, the fierce glare cutting into my aching eyes. I'm still squinting when the beast jostles its head, then threads its tongue beneath the log and flicks me free like a piece of plaque. My heart lodges into my throat as I soar through the sky, blocking the scream threatening to erupt. Thankfully. I refuse to die with a wail on my lips. I will growl, curse, and snarl at these small, thorny, fire-breathing fuckers until they tear out my windpipe. Gravity lugs me down, and I faceplant into something warm, grainy, impossible to breathe through. Softer than I imagined a Saber-Scythe nest would be. Not as flesh-meltingly hot as I expected, either, though I'm sure its spawn will pick up the slack. The stake jerks backward, lobbing the other direction and thumping down again so I'm lying on it and not the other way around, like a perfectly presented meal on a stick. These hatchlings must be huge. And strong. And they must like playing with their food. Lovely. My stomach knots, and a retching spill of Saber-Scythe saliva gushes up my throat. I tip my head and cough, hack, heave,
guts cramping as my body rejects everything. Between each burping, groaning wretch, I pry my aching eyes open a little more, taking in the male standing over me with his arms crossed and a scowl on his beautifully tailored face. A male I've become painfully familiar with, now watching me vomit all over the minuscule grains of stone I garner must be sand. I've heard about it. First impressions count, and unfortunately for this sand that's now scratching my eyeballs and plastered all over my face and hair, we're off to a bad start. I am, however, alive and currently not burning to death or being gnawed on. A realization that turns my retching heaves into laughter that shakes my entire chest, sounding like one of Claude's manic episodes. "I'm so glad it's you," I dredge out between bouts of belly-aching chortles. "Now I finally get the pleasure of killing you."
"I just saved your life,"
the Incognito King drones, brows raised, black cloak billowing in the scorch of wind that throws more fucking sand in my eyes.
"Perhaps a thank you is better fitting than a dagger dragged across my throat."
"If you'd almost drowned in Saberside drool, you'd disagree," I proclaim, squinting up at his broody face with the confidence of somebody not shackled in iron and tied to a stick. "How about we switch seats? See how you feel after you've been marinating in its mouth for a bit. I'm certain you'll want to slit my throat, too." The king banks his head to the side, his voice a rumbled drawl as he says,
"You'd rather I have broken you from your cell, scurried you out of gore, and left an unsatisfied guild of nobles still frothing for the blood of your rebellious clan. Perhaps you hit your head in Rygun's mouth because any sense you harbor is being spat out like minced meat."
Rygun. Guess this is the Burn King, Khan Vagor. Fitting. And just my luck to be snatched by the feared, mysterious king, and not the one who's apparently still mourning his dead queen. Sounds like that one has a heart. From what I hear, all this one has is a very hungry dragon and an affinity with boulders strong enough to crush a city with a single word. Lovely. Think I'll beg Rygun to pick me up again and cart me straight to Gondor. Spit me out in a nest. I'd rather try my shitty luck with a bunch of famished hatchlings. "I did hit my head, thank you very much. I also choked on your dragon's saliva, was almost swallowed, and currently reek of dead things that'll probably never wash off. Now untie me so we can get this over with."
"You're not afraid of Rygun?"
I look past his hulking form to the beast at his back, perched on his haunches. Inky eyes narrowed on me as he blows whiffs of steam from flared nostrils, ignoring the spike of fear that tries to nuzzle into my callous-encrusted heart. I've often thought folk look like their pets. This is no exception. Both beast and male are built from slabs of brawn, casting shadows across the rust-colored sand. Their ember eyes penetrate my soul with cutthroat stares that snatch something inside my chest and grip it tight, leaving me with the knowledge that wiggling will be to my detriment, that the grip will only tighten until my eyes pop from their sockets and blood bursts from my mouth. They're both frightening, basking in their prime, both devastating to look at, in entirely different ways. I clear my throat, tossing a slop of saliva-laden hair off my face with a flick of my head, eyes narrowing on the king looking down at me with an expression as dry as our parched surroundings. No beast is tame enough to cradle a squirming meal in their maw if it's not meant for their young, and your beast looks like he eats, I say, nipping another glance at Rygun, wondering how many living things contributed to his hulking size. He would have crunched on me if he didn't like me a little bit. Ropes. Now. Khan continues to watch me, unmoving, not breaking a sweat
despite the fierce sunshine beating upon the side of his face, cutting across his strong, striking features that threatened to unpick me from my murderous thoughts. Again. Quick, I'm getting burnt.
If you kill me, you'll be stuck in the Boltanic Plains without a ride, without access to water, and with that skin, you'll wither like a moon plume caught in the sun and be dead before aurora rise.
He grinds out, stating the obvious. I can already feel my skin chapping.
And that's if Rygon lets you live after he sees me bleeding out in the sand. He may like you now, but I can assure you, his loyalty lies with me.
I scowl at the creature, who blows more puffs of smoke from his flared nostrils, a mighty rumble broiling in his chest that makes me picture being caught between his sabers and crunched into a mulch of bone shards and frothy blood.
Plus, you have no weapons, a festering pin in your shoulder, and if I'm not mistaken, you haven't eaten in almost 2 rises. How about we wave that white flag again and you suppress the urge to kill me until after you've feasted, bathed, and you're no longer suffering from an infection that's beginning to weave through your bloodstream, hmm?
He's so full of dragon shit. The only infection I'm suffering stems directly from your self-indignant presence.
Wrong.
His upper lip peels back from canines long and honed, making muscles tighten low in my belly. Strangely, he crouches, eclipsing the sun as he pulls the collar of my tunic with such force a button pops free. What are you? He stuffs his finger down the hole in my shoulder, the stab of pain like a fiery poker straight through muscle, sinew, bone. I scream. A grated burst I immediately regret. Nobody makes me scream. Certainly not him. His finger retreats with a squelch, and I snarl through bared teeth, heaving short, sharp breaths that do nothing to satiate the rage swelling in my chest like a roil of dragon flame. He sniffs his bloody finger. The next words powering out of him with such savagery they're almost tangible against my pebbling skin.
I can smell it.
Wet warmth bubbles from the freshly plundered wound while I study all the bits of him I'd like to slash and dash. I really want to kill you.
Perfectly aware,
he mumbles, flicking my blood off his hand.
But now is not the time.
I look at the beast at his back, extending his wings, basking in the sun, then cast my gaze farther abroad, our surroundings a stretch of rippled sand, bits of it being picked up and tossed around in copper eddies. The air above it ripples too, distorting the powder blue horizon littered with dusky moons almost close enough to reach up and cradle in my palms. Silver ribbons of aurora tangle with the rotund tombstones. A pretty embellishment for the otherwise scorched terrain. There are no hills, no trees, no stones or rocks or boulders. No signs of life. There's certainly no water. Just me, a king, and a dragon that's half the size of a mountain. Great.
A white flag is a white flag,
he says. And I cut my gaze back to him as he rests his elbows on his bent knees and tilts his head to the side.
May I free you from your shackles and trust that you won't disregard the rules of our engagement?
Probably not.
At least you're honest,
he mutters, heaving a low, resounding sigh. He reaches down the side of his boot and retrieves a bronze blade that's shaped like a petal. Fuck. Shoulda lied. I jerk against my ropes, hissing through clenched teeth as he brings it to my breast, slips it beneath the cord, and cuts. That segment of rope unravels, allowing me to pull my first deep breath since I was bound to the creator's forsaken stake. My eyes must express my level of shock, because a glint of humor sparks in his ember orbs.
Did you think I was going to stab you, prisoner 73?
Of course. You saw how many skin slabs they slapped on the ground at my trial, and I'd be lying if I said that was all of them. You're obviously all heft and no brain.
He chuffs, severing another rope. Another. Another.
I roll off the stake, promptly face-planting in the sand again.
He heaves me to a wobbly stand and brushes me off, then leans close, sniffing.
You're right. You do smell bad.
Screw you, I mutter, and he cocks a brow.
You wanted to kill me a moment ago. I can't keep up.
I snort laugh. Don't worry, few can.
Is that a challenge?
He asks, stuffing his blade back down his boot. No, but I will issue one to let me go.
Heartily decline.
Of course. I hope he doesn't mind when I heartily slit his throat.
He unpins his cloak, pulling it from his shoulders, giving me an up-close view of the powerful way his broad, muscular body moves. My cheeks burn as he swathes me in the airy material, secures the pin beneath my chin, then flicks me on the nose.
Adorable.
I'm going to cut out your tongue with that blade in your boot.
He whips the hood up over my head, shrouding me in shade.
I'd prefer you use your teeth, but beggars can't be choosers.
I frown, realization dawning slower than an aurora rise. An indignant scoff escapes me, though it quickly snips off when he crouches, grips my left ankle in one hand, clutches the chain in the other, and yanks, shoulders bulging. A link pops free and catapults through the air.
Well, he repeats the process with my other ankle, severing the length of chain he flings to the side.
You're good at that. I wave my hands at him, the metal tether draped between them jingling with the erratic motion. This next. He gives me a dry look and plucks a bit of rope off the ground. Merging my hands together, he slides my shackles farther up my arms, then binds my wrists, knotting it off.
That's not what I meant.
He pries the remaining chain free from my manacles, popping more links like they're made of clay.
I'm aware.
Damn. Underachiever, I see. No judgment here.
Releasing a hearty rumble, he begins to stand, then throws his weight forward, wrapping his large arms around me. He flops me onto his back and lifts me like a sack of grain.
What are you doing? I scream, hanging over his shoulder as he lumbers toward his dragon. My heart leaps so far up my throat, I almost choke on it.
Kun, no! I did not agree to this!
His body stiffens, steps slowing, a low, grating sound coming from him.
Say it again.
What?
My name, Moonbeam. Say it again.
If it'll get me out of this saddle ride, I'll scream it to the sky until my voice box ruptures.
Con! 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 Now put me down! Quick!
He fills his lungs, his entire chest inflating, like he just took his first breath since he began a deep dive.
You didn't say please,
he finally says, then kicks forward again.
What? Please!
Too late.
I'm going to shatter his bones and use them for toothpicks. He reaches the side of the heaving beast to where lengths of knotted rope dangle from its saddle, garnished with an array of foot loops, one of which he threads his boot into.
Put me back in his mouth!
He heaves us up the ropes, one jerking motion at a time, and I watch in wide-eyed horror as the ground drifts farther and farther away, giving up my wriggling struggle when I come to the gut-tumbling realization that I cannot squirm or slaughter my way out of this. Reaching the drape of patched-together hides that saddles the mammoth beast, Con battles the final few loops, then tosses his leg over the saddle and thumps me into his lap. Straddling him, I look up into his eyes, mouth dropping open, battered breathless by his immense presence. He looks down upon me, his rough exhale pouring over my upturned face, the air between us becoming charged with a static that makes my skin pebble. Creators. Drenched in the smell of leather and the heady blend of his intoxicating scent, this tightening feeling low in my belly yearns for something every other part of me is utterly opposed to, and I consider whether it's prudent to ask this male if he'd like to fuck before I slit his throat. Probably shouldn't.
You have until the count of 10 to decide which way you want to sit, at which stage I'll kick Rygun into the sky, and you'll be stuck that way.
Khan grinds out past gritted teeth, my heart plummeting a little more with each condemning word. I open my mouth, about to spit something sharp, when he says,
1, 2.
Shit. I wiggle, heaving my right leg up, getting a foothold atop his thigh.
3, 4.
I try wrestling to a stand, but lose my balance and flop back down again, face planting against his chest as he rumbles a deep,
5.
Count slower, I growl, flattening my hands upon his abdomen, introducing myself to a stack of muscles that feel more like rocks. My mouth dries.
6.
He says, his voice gravel against my pebbling skin.
7.
Definitely need to move. I kick my foot up again and shove to a wobbly stand.
8.
I turn so I'm facing forward, heart pounding hard and fast as I glance around us, my feet tingling with this sudden realization of how high up we are, that this is our starting point.
9.
Creators, slay this male. I let my feet slide either side of the saddle, landing perfectly between his legs so hard I garner a deep grunt from him that